Welcome to Career Tools. This week, Working from Home Will Stunt Your Career, Chapter 2, Results, Part 2. The questions this class answers are, what effect will working from home have on my career? And what should I consider when debating whether to work from home?
Hey folks, it's Mark again. Just want to alert you, it's come to the end of the year and you may be thinking about your first quarter opportunities for development. Hopefully you've got some new budget. You can either ping your boss or you can take it out of your own budget. We've got conferences in Seattle and in Austin, and that's in January. And then in February, we've got Silicon Valley. And these are just the public ones that are in person. We also have Boston on the 8th and 9th of February. We also have Ottawa on the 22nd and 23rd of February. And then in early March, we've got Phoenix, March 1st and 2nd. We haven't been to Phoenix in a while, so if you're in Phoenix, that'll be an opportunity for you to come and see us in person. And there are some virtual events sprinkled in there as well. Come see us. We'll make you better as a manager and as a professional.
Last week, we gave you the negative effects. We gave you one thing to do to mitigate those effects. And then this week, we're going to give you a few more things to mitigate that discount on working from home.
Mm-hmm. Next thing we want to talk about is asking more questions up front, right? Working from home, you know, we can easily predict that there will be times during a project or an assignment that we're given when we won't be able to proceed because we don't have enough information. That happens. That's normal. But communication when working from home is degraded significantly when we're remote or someone else is remote. And so the initial information that we get could be lacking. And so what we want to do is we want to take those opportunities to use those initial conversations to ask those questions that we think could be coming down the pike, right? Could be coming down the road.
Yeah. Well, instead of assuming, oh, I'll get that information when I get to that point and I need it, what we want to do is have that conversation upfront, or at least if you don't have it when you're assigned a piece of work, then sort of as soon as you've been able to think through, okay, I'm going to do this and this and this and this, and then, oh, there's a potential sticking point. Just make sure that at that point you ask, okay, when I get to this point, should I choose A or B? Because those moments that we would normally use when we're co-located, you know, the moment when your boss happens to be walking to the same meeting and you're walking down the corridor together and you could go, oh, by the way, you know, supplier X, should I choose A or B? Or, you know, you're leaving a meeting or you happen to be walking together, at, you know, going to lunch and you see them in the lunchroom. And you can just say quickly, hey, by the way, meant to ask you, A or B? Those moments when you would just have one of those, oh, quick question, or like 30 seconds, they aren't going to happen. And one of the things about working remotely is you never know where people are. So,
right.
You know, one of the things I noticed when I started working from home is the number of people that call me when I'm in the middle of a meeting. Like I'm on a call or I'm recording or it's on my calendar and people still send me messages and they're like, hey, can I talk to you about this? No, I'm in a meeting. And because I'm sat at my desk all the time, it's like this assumption that I'm here. But when people are in the office, you don't know. They went to a meeting in another building or they went to a meeting in another office or they're not in the office that day. And so that, you know, where you would normally just, if you were in the office with them, you know, oh, I see their jacket's not on their desk. They must not be in. I'll call them, right?
Yeah.
You don't get that. So you call their desk phone, they don't answer, or you call the cell phone, they don't answer. And then you're like, well, I don't know. Are they gone for 5 minutes? Are they just in the bathroom? Are they gone? Are they out all day? Did they go to a customer site where they can't answer them? You just don't know. And people aren't good about keeping their calendars up to date, which is why other people ignore people's calendars. And so you can't
tell. It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, exactly.
People don't keep their calendars up to date. If you ask them about it, they say, well, people don't check my calendar anyways. Well, they don't check your calendar because you don't keep it up to date. And then it's this just round and round
vicious
we go.
Vicious circle.
Yeah. And then even better, just to add on to this layer of complexity, right? Then we throw in, when we're working remotely, potentially time zones, right?
Yes.
And so someone says, oh, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm on the West Coast here in the States. And so I'm on Pacific time. And we have some folks who are on Eastern time and we have clients who are on Eastern time. We have clients and people that we interact with who are in Australia. And so we have time zone differences as well. And so people will, you know, ping and email and those types of things. And you feel bad when you say, oh, I didn't realize that you pinged me, but that was because it was 4:30 in the morning and yes. I was asleep, yeah. You know? And, you know, you have that. And then you have just that added, you know, issue. It's just one more thing. Then you add in daylight saving time. And then you have those people who live in Arizona, those crazy people. No, I'm just joking.
I think living in Arizona is fine. It's just the Arizona people who choose right. the time zones is confusing. But yeah.
Yes, it's the time zones.
So being those quick conversations are just so much harder. And you don't want to schedule a call for something you know is going to take 30 seconds. You're just like, yeah. Oh, I'll fit it in. And then 3 days go past and you haven't fitted it in. So it makes a lot of sense to ask questions of your boss when you're first given a project or an assignment. Based on your knowledge, ask questions that you know will stop you proceeding if you don't have a decision from your boss.
Absolutely. Like, for example, if you're purchasing supplies for an event, in the office, you might be used to having the boss okay a price once you've got it from the supplier. But knowing supplies are in demand and that you'll have to, you know, quickly agree to the price when you get it. Working from home, you would ask your boss something like, if the price range is between $100 and $200, can I go ahead and agree or do you still need to okay it? That's an incredibly valuable question to know ahead of time.
Yeah. And you just make that decision and you're done. Easy.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Here's another example. A boss asks you to get with a colleague to work out a solution to a particular problem. And that problem requires you to do some pre-work to work out what's the problem and what's the potential solution. And normally what you would do is your boss gives it to you, you go do the pre-work, and then you go to your boss and say, hey, you did tell Teresa that I'm coming with this problem, right? She does know that I'm coming with a potential solution and that's going to cause her work, right? Because, by the way, it's a really good thing to do if you want a good reception.
Yeah.
But working from home, you'd want to check that first, so that you don't get in that loop where you can't get hold of your boss and you don't know whether or not Teresa's been given the heads up, and then you don't know whether to go to her or not because, you know, you don't know whether or not you're going to get a good reception. And if this isn't the kind of information that your boss volunteers when they tell you to go help someone or that you're to get with someone to resolve mm-hmm. something, start asking that question, because you'll get a much better reception if people get heads up first.
Absolutely. The next thing we're going to talk through is proactively report on work status, right? So manager tools managers and directs know that the work is not just doing the task, right? It's also the reporting of the work. I have something I use in conferences all the time, and I probably heard it from Mark, I'm sure, at some point, and now I'm just regurgitating it. But I always use that old axiom of if a tree falls in the forest and no one's around to hear it, does it make a sound? And I always say, well, no, because nobody reported that it fell, right? It wasn't reported.
True. There are no trees falling when they're not reported as falling.
Right. So we have to also think of the task as the task and the reporting, right? That the task is done, or that it is on track, or that it's off track. And so if there's a system, for example, for reporting project task status, it's not enough to just assume that, hey, my boss will see that task is done and therefore it knows it's done, or we'll see I've commented, here's where it's at, or here's the status, and then they'll know. Seeing and reading are two different things, right? Because seeing something is not the same as reading it. And second, the task's status is one amongst many, right? It's never, there's never a report that has one line.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, let's see what the status of all our customers is. And there's like 900 of them, and you're expecting yeah. your boss to find the one he's really interested in. Not happening.
No, not at all. And so what we would recommend is that you report on those things that are important rather than potentially those things being lost, right? And that could be as simple as, you know, an end of day email where you just send an update. And, you know, this reporting is not only about letting your boss know status, but also making sure that he or she knows your results and making you more visible, right? Your name at the top of their inbox.
If you have a task on a project plan and it says, resolve bug number 4,723, right? And you check that off as done, your boss has no idea whether that was the 40 easy email inbox or the 400 complex email inbox. what we were talking about is not just doing the work, but making sure they know how hard you're working, how complex the work is, how difficult it was. And if you send an email that says, hey, I know you were concerned about whatever number I just gave that bug, and you report on that every day for a week, and they know it took you a week to resolve, and you had to get other people involved, and there was some complexity with the versions of the software or whatever, it turns it into not just, oh, you just checked off a task off the project plan, which is one of 1,000 and has equal weight with the other 999, but you actually did significant work. It's about getting the credit for the work you're doing. So
absolutely.
An end of day email, this is one of my favorite things to do, an end of day email consists of each of the priority tasks you're working on, and you do three parts. So this is what I did, this is what happened or where we are, and this is what I'm going to do next. And I like doing them at the end of the day because it's a kind of, this is where I got to. And because you do it on a rhythm, it's sort of an update every time. If you could do it in the morning as well, but it's nice to do it at a regular time because then it's the next time you do it, because you said, this is what I'm going to do, you get the result of what you were going to do at the end of the day. So for example, I talked to the Acme rep on the phone about the delivery of the 10-foot pipes. She said her system said it would be an on-time delivery, even though the pipes are still in Arizona. Arizona again. I'll check on the status in the morning and call her again if necessary. So if you send that one the end of day Tuesday, you've said that you're going to call in the morning. At the end of the day Wednesday, you can say, I called. She said the status, they're going to be there tomorrow. I don't believe her, but that's what she's telling me. Or she says they're going to be there tomorrow. They have moved from Arizona to New Mexico, so I'm hoping. That also gives you an opportunity to give your boss a heads up on something that may or may not happen that's not going to be your fault. Like, you've done the effort of chasing up, of getting the information, of telling someone that it's important. And then when those pipes don't arrive, you did your bit and you don't get, why didn't they arrive on time? And you're like, how's that my fault? I wasn't driving the truck.
Right. And usually that's not, why didn't they arrive on time? It's usually, why am I just finding out that they didn't arrive on time?
Or and why that am I finding will out never happen. Someone else that they didn't arrive on time?
Right. Yes.
Andrew and I had exactly that conversation before we started recording. So, And don't just include your boss on this kind of proactive reporting. There are other people in your organization who need to know that a task is done because of the impact on the overall project, or because their work can't start until yours is finished. And your customers, too, will appreciate proactive status reporting. You will get fewer status chasing emails and phone calls from all sides if you communicate status proactively outside of whatever system there is organizationally. Yeah. That was one of my secrets to success when I was a recruiter. And I had, hiring managers. I had 50 hiring managers who I was recruiting for. And every 2 days I would send them an email and it would say, this is where we are. This is what we're doing. This is where we are. This is what we're doing. And everybody else was like, why are you doing that? You have nothing to tell them from 2 days ago. You didn't get any new resumes. You're still trying to set up interviews. And I'm like, because if I send them the email, they don't call me in a half about what I'm not doing. If I send them the email, I get in first and they think I'm super customer service focused and I'm a high D. I just don't want them to hassle me and I want them to leave me alone to do my work. But it works both ways. It's amazing how much more credit you get for proactively reporting status, even when the status is negative.
I'm going to go a little off track here, but I think anyone who is either, thinking about working from home remotely or has been doing it the last year and a half, or maybe, we're talking about, or we spoke about in the last chapter about how maybe that grace from bosses is going to wane a bit. But anyone who's ever experienced sitting at their desk or being at home, right? And they're working, they're on the clock, but they get that call from their boss and they go, oh, what could this be, right? Mm-hmm. Is this something that I messed up or didn't do or something like that, right? We're inherently probably a little negative in those instances. And so when that happens, right, I think of, well, what if you could control that?
Yes.
Well, you could control that by sending that email.
Yes.
And listen, you're not absolved of that feeling, but there's a stronger likelihood that if you're going to get a phone call that from a boss that wants clarification or, there's a good chance that your email prompted that, right? So you can send that email and know that, hey, if I get a call in the next 15 minutes, it's probably because of that email and I'm prepared to have that conversation. There are so many balls in the air all the time. And when you're working remotely or you're not co-located, you don't know where, you know, you're juggling, you know, balls and someone else is juggling balls and some of those balls kind of commingle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what a great opportunity to send that and then know that if you get a call in the next few minutes, it's probably based on something in that and you're well prepared to have that discussion rather than having to go, hold on, my brain's got to switch gears. Let me figure out what are we talking about here, right? Give me some more context, which makes you look unprepared or unorganized, which is not always the case. There's just a lot going on.
It's just what's going on. Yeah.
Folks, I want to talk about one of the things that's included in our licenses, and that's the interview creation tool. I think we passed over 100,000 interviews have been created using this tool. The way to get the tool, by the way, is to become a licensee. You pay $200 for the license. You get everything else that comes with it. You get executive tools, the podcast, and the show notes. You get all the show notes for Manager Tools and Career Tools. You get the resume workbook, the interviewing series, effective feedback, first job fundamentals, crazy, crazy, crazy value. And then you also get the interview creation tool. Imagine you're going to be hiring, particularly if you're a manager, you're going to be hiring in the next 90 days. And you ought to know how to do that. And you ought to know how to start an interview. There's some things you'd say at the beginning. You ought to know what the first question is. The interview creation tool will tell you. And then it will create arguably the best interview questions you could possibly create for virtually any job, and then tell you what to look for in the answer and give you room to take notes. We submit that it's the finest of its type in the world, and many organizations have licensed it over the years, and they have the entire organization using nothing but interview creation tool interviews. Good reason to become a licensee.
Okay, so now we get to the bit you were looking forward to, which is ask for and respond well to feedback.
Yeah. So when I saw this in the cast, I thought that's such a nuanced and brilliant point to make. When we are working for a manager and we're remote or not co-located with them, part of our performance, achieving those objectives that we've talked about, is getting feedback along the way, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing that we're going to be able to stay on course. And many managers struggle with feedback, right? And it's one of the things that as a direct, you have so little control over that, right? It really has to be something that your manager thinks of and shares with you. And I think this point of the podcast is we can help. There are some things that we can do, right? And that is we can ask for feedback. Feedback is the building block of performance management. And if you want to perform highly, you have to be able to receive and internalize and act on feedback. And so even if you really, really struggle when people tell you something that you did well or you did poorly, the first thing you should say or the first thing that you should think of is, I want my boss to leave this conversation having felt good about delivering this feedback, right? Yeah. I want my boss to give me more of this, whether I want to hear it or not. I want that open line of communication. Mm-hmm. And so you have to think of kind of the forest through the trees, mm-hmm. right? I may disagree with that one piece of feedback, but in general, I want more feedback. And we ask this in conferences. Everybody wants more feedback, provided it's delivered, you know, professionally and politely. But I would argue that even if it's not, I want to know. If my boss is for, you know, lack of a better term, pissed off at me for something I've done, I don't want them to keep that to themselves. I want to know. And if that means they need to be a little curt or a little stern with me, done. Do it. I want that information.
And you don't need to ask for feedback with a capital F. Like, you don't have to, could you give me some feedback? Because that makes it, you know, into some big deal. You can just say at the end of a presentation, you can say, hey, how did you think that went?
Yeah.
Did my slides make sense? Did I make that point properly? It felt a bit off to me. Or that question was really tricky. Could I have said something different? You know?
Yeah.
Just ask for something really specific. And the more times you are thankful, receptive, and you act on it, the more likely you are to get more feedback. Right?
Yeah.
You've got to make it easy and painless and positive experience.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of directs, well, at least in my experience, I've worked with directs who actually think about this the opposite way. If I can make this an uncomfortable conversation for my boss, then they won't do this that much, right? Then I won't have to hear as much about my performance.
You can't hear my astounded face, but my astounded face is on.
It's uncanny, right? They think, the worse I can make this, right, then I don't have to hear about this. And it's so contrary to someone who ought to want to perform highly, right? If you want to perform highly, if you just want to plod along, right, then no, you don't want feedback. But you're not going to perform high, or you're not going to be a high performer. And, you know, at the end of the day, if I'm a manager and I have two directs, and one of the directs is a joy to share feedback with and, you know, give them insight into their performance, and they're just a sponge. They're like, yeah, absolutely. Okay, I totally understand that. Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. And then one of my directs is constantly pushing back, right? And if I don't know the feedback model and the shot across the bow and how to deal with all of that, then I'm just going to give less. And I'm going to go into those conversations going, oh, this is going to be like pulling teeth. I got to figure out.
Right, and you can have 20 uncomfortable conversations, or you can have one really uncomfortable conversation at the end of the year during their performance review when that's uncomfortable anyway. So like, exactly. I'm going to save it all up for my performance review and just go, one day is going to be really bad.
Yeah, totally.
So asking for feedback not only gives you the chance to get the right results, and to some extent, the right results are defined by your manager, even if you disagree with them, but it also signals your willingness to be part of the in-group, to be part of the team, and to want to grow and to want to be better and to want to serve the team. And that is something that will make you more visible to your manager.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if I could boil that whole section of this cast down, it's just say thank you, right? I mean, when someone shares something with you, even if you disagree with it, or even if you want to explain why you did that, right? You just say thanks, right? Thanks for the act of sharing it.
Yes,
not
exactly.
The,
thank you for sharing.
Not that specific piece of feedback, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the next part is increase communication everywhere.
This is against specific actionable advice. increase communication everywhere. It's kind of general. But it isn't enough just to communicate with the people that you need to in order to get your work done. And it's not enough to communicate with those people and your manager, or even those people, your manager, and the rest of your team. If you were in the office, you'd be communicating with all sorts of people when you meet them in the halls, in the coffee pot, at the coffee machine, and in the parking lot. I shouldn't have written those two things together. If you want to have the same effect when you're working from home, you have to have at least the same volume of communication with the same range of people, right?
Absolutely. And for most of us, in a remote environment, I mean, this means having a plan, right? Being more deliberate about this, which means writing an actual list of people that we want to talk to and, you know, what the cadence is, right? Do we want to talk to them weekly? Do we want to talk to them daily? Making a commitment of doing that. And this communication doesn't need to be long. It doesn't need to be meaningful. You know, I mean, there are times where, you know, I Slack Mark about Ted Lasso, or like a, you know, a TV show, right? Something that's not consequential for the work that we're doing, but yeah, it's important to just, you know, keep in touch and have that communication, or the last point of communication not be
a week,
2 weeks, 4 weeks, right? Those types of things, because it's very easy working remotely for that time to go by in a blink.
Yeah. It's like when you see someone, you know, you go to the supermarket and you happen to live in the same neighborhood and you're like, oh, I haven't bumped into you for ages. And then you work it out and it's like 6 weeks and you're like, we live down the street from each other. How did that happen? And yet 6 weeks goes by in a flash. And it's really easy to not have talked to somebody for that long. So cumulatively, what you want is to be a real person in the minds of your boss and your colleagues, rather than an email address or a disembodied voice on the phone. Think about the people that you work with remotely, or suppliers or vendors, people that are a little bit further away from your team, and think about how two-dimensional those people seem to you.
Mm-hmm.
The more two-dimensional, the less value you have to the team. Because even though like value in terms of the work you're doing is that's not it, but it's the amount of space you take up in their heads almost.
It's the connections, those mental, exactly. You know, connections. I will not name names. I'm not going to drop any dimes, but I have had friends, you know, other, you know, managers, directors who have shared with me that going from a in-person environment to a remote environment, it's easy to keep track of who's who and, mm-hmm. and, you know who people are. But as we progress in this remote environment, they're hiring people who they've never met in person. And yeah, there's video calls, there's things like that. But I have a friend who had a team grow pretty rapidly during this pandemic. And he has told me point blank, he's like, Andrew, for 6 months, I have a Ronald and I have a Robert. And I kept mm-hmm. mixing them up. I kept conflating them and not realizing who is who. And I was like, well, obviously it crystallized what happened. And he was like, it was incredibly embarrassing. I was going through, it was just recently, I was going through my end of year kind of review of my staff and talking about ratings and reviews and all of that. And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, I'm giving someone the wrong rating. Like that's how bad it is, wow. Right? Like I'm going to give someone the wrong rating. Like I've got to get my act together. It's when they're just the name on an email, right? Uh-huh. When you're just the name on an email, you've got to realize you've got to set yourself apart. You've got to be an actual person. I yes. love the way that you wrote that. You got to be a real person. And the only way you do that is through the stuff that we've talked about today.
So things like offering to help when you see an opportunity to, being available and responsive on IM or phone or text or email. If your company uses Slack or something similar and somebody posts something like something's been completed or they did a task or the heads up, my power's out, send something that says, oh, sorry to hear that, or great job, or just put an emoji if you have to. Please try and write words, but an emoji's enough so that they know you're there. You didn't just mm-hmm. walk off. You're not asleep in your bed and Slack is somehow set to say that you're still there, which is really easy. Being on video for conference calls whenever you can, which means 99% of the time, because there's no good reason for not being on video. You know, if you have people working in your house, if you have children, if you have a bandwidth issue that day, then fine. But 99% of the time, be on video, because then you're a real person. You're not just a black square with a name or a picture right. of quite a lot of people don't even have a picture of themselves. I have to say I don't. So, but then I'm always
I don't
on video.
Either.
So, you know, if I was never on video, people would just think I was the Career Tools logo.
Right.
Deciding to work from home is an exercise in deciding whether you're willing to accept the negative effect on your career and do the extra work to mitigate the negative effect in return for the benefits that working from home will bring to you and your family and whatever else made that decision for you. Only you make that decision. And the one thing you can't do is have your cake and eat it too. Just can't be done.
Well said.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back with a new topic next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.